Brad Card, one of our political analysts and all-stars out of D.C. this morning, out of the gate early. Brad missed the cut at the Masters, but was at Pinehurst this week. But, Brad, seriously, a lot of stuff. Very busy week. John Decker's on deck talking about this. Very busy week in D.C.
Yeah, it is super busy, and we got a rare weekend session that's about to happen. Vote on Pfizer, hopefully today in the Senate, to move that through, and we'll see what happens there. But the foreign aid package, the supplemental package, $95 billion, big dollars, super controversial. The Freedom Caucus whack jobs, as I think they are, still playing games with the motion to vacate on the Speaker of the House. And the Speaker, I don't know why he did this, but he backed off a plan. He was going to change the rules, and I'm going to put that in the foreign aid package and vote on it. He decided against doing that. I think he would have had the votes, and I think that there was a whole bunch of people calling for him to do it just because it would provide some stability in Congress. Right now, one person can call the motion to vacate, bring it to the floor, and without a majority, Democrats vote against it. You can have a handful of people, just a couple members, determine who the leader, who the Speaker of the House is, which is insanity, and it's caused so many problems here, Jack. It just makes the place very dysfunctional. And you put it in perspective. As I've said before, the average for number of bills enacted into law every Congress is close to 300, about 300 pieces of legislation enacted into law, and that's probably an average over the last 10 years, somewhere in that ballpark. Mm-hmm. High of a little over 400, and then a low of like 260 or 280. So right now, Congress is at 27. So highly unproductive Congress, and the reason why, significant reason why, is because this motion to vacate has speakers petrified.
Right.
And just lastly, Jack, you have three Republicans on the Rules Committee, and this is something that happened. The Rules Committee is something a lot of people don't understand, they don't know, but there's a rule for every bill that goes to the floor, how the bill is going to go, what amendments would be germane, all that. It's controlled by the Speaker. The Speaker determines who serves in the majority, and the minority leader determines who serves for the minority. And there are an overwhelming majority on that committee. You have three members, Ralph Norman, Chip Roy, and Tom Massey, who are hardcore Freedom Caucus. Kevin McCarthy invited by them by putting them onto the Rules Committee so that they wouldn't cause problems for him in the conference.
Yep.
They're the ones voting against these rules. And unprecedented, Democrats helped pass this rule out of the Rules Committee. So the vote that will happen today was because of Democrats' help
rule. That leads to my question. My understanding is with such a thin margin of the Republicans and then the Representative Green and others who want to test and oust Johnson, but there might be some Democrats and Republicans who would not go along with that. Would that be enough to save him and keep him Speaker for now or not?
Yes. I think that Democrats are fed up with the fact that this place has been so dysfunctional, too, and that a handful of people are the ones causing this. Now, they have a couple, as I'm going to call them, whack jobs.
Hold on, that's true of our country. Well, that's true of our country, Brad, a handful of people causing all the headaches.
Well, but the thing is, Jack, is that people, you know what, when you give people votes, I mean, the Speaker, I think, has been very accommodating as far as we'll give you amendments, we'll let you vote on things, you can talk about it, and at the end of the day, you lose your vote. If you lose, then you lose. Move on. But these people, that's not good enough. They believe that, well, everybody has to believe with them. And it's just mind-boggling, and it shuts things down. They are ideologically pure in their own minds and will not give one inch. And it doesn't matter the fact that, you know, that there's 435 members. Each serves a little over 800,000 people. The fact that four or five people can completely change the direction of this Congress is wrong. It's just flat out wrong.
All right. Well, listen, we appreciate it. I know you got to run. You're going to have to, since Congress is working this week, and no more Pinehurst for you. Thank you, Brad Card, live in Washington.
Georgetown Hockey alumni game this afternoon.
What is it?
I'll be there.
What?
Georgetown Hockey alumni hockey game and golf tournament. Golf tournament this afternoon, hockey game tomorrow. Big weekend.
A Brad Card afternoon. Okay, Brad. Thank you.
There we go. It's a great day.
Good morning, New Hampshire. Powered by Sig Sauer. Now, back to Jack Heath on the Pulse of New Hampshire.
John, you're joining us as our White House correspondent, and I know you have on the docket a very busy week in Washington, as it was, a busy time in Manhattan as well with Donald Trump and that trial going on, the jury stuff with the hush money case. But we also have an overnight military strike by Israel into Iran on a military base. I know that's not top of your agenda because it just happened, but this is getting to be kind of a, not kind of, very serious situation, this back and forth directly now, not from a proxy state, but Tehran or Iran and Israel, and the Secretary of State Blinken saying they were given advance notice, but not involved, but this is a strategic strike inside Iran. Do we know any more, Iran, any more this morning, John?
Well, we know this. We know that Iran has put out a statement through its state media, and essentially they are playing down what happened in the early morning hours, which is a good thing in the sense that that gives you a sense that perhaps there will not be a retaliation for the retaliation. Things could calm down. I think that Iran perhaps wants to let sleeping dogs lie. I think both Israel and Iran have made their points, and then the attention of the U.S. can return to trying to reach a ceasefire as it relates to Israel's war against the terrorist group Hamas.
Well, it's got to be interesting. But in Washington, of course, does Speaker Johnson hold on to his job? Are there a few Democrats and Republicans that want to keep some sense of order? Because it's been a very busy, chaotic week.
It's been a chaotic week. As things stand right now, there are only two House Republicans, just two, who have publicly said they wish to oust Speaker Johnson, Marjorie Taylor Greene and Thomas Massie. They are members from Georgia and Kentucky, respectively. But you have not seen a bandwagon effect of other Republicans that have publicly come out against him. That could change, of course. You know, we'll see how the weekend goes for Speaker Johnson. But he has said, look, the issue of continued military assistance for Ukraine is more important than his own job. He's putting what he believes are the needs of our country, our national security, ahead of his own personal ambition. And we'll see how that plays out. He's only been in the job, Jack, for 6 months. That's, of course, after the previous House Speaker, Kevin McCarthy, was ousted because eight Republicans stepped forward and were dissatisfied with his speakership.
All right. I appreciate it. John Decker, our own White House correspondent, checking in live. Thank you, John.
Thanks, Jack.
Kevin Landrigan, New Hampshire leader, a senior political reporter. A lot going on locally. Let's get back to that, Kevin, including the 2nd Congressional District taking shape, the race there, the State House. Good morning, Kevin. I'll let you use some oxygen.
Hey, how you doing, Jack? Yeah.
I'm a little fired up.
Yeah. Good reason. There's a lot going on in the world, and certainly a lot that's disturbing, to be sure. But here, back home, there is a lot of jockeying, right, and a lot of moving pieces, as we've seen with, you know, Dr. Vic getting into the congressional race, put out a pretty impressive list of endorsements early on. I mean, a lot of folks that kind of represent the full spectrum of the Republican Party, you know, some hardcore conservatives, some moderates, some sort of conservatives, some Liberty Alliance people. I mean, he's obviously trying to build a pretty big coalition. And also, I think people who support him trying to, if they can, clear the field, you know, for this race. Obviously, there's already people running in this race. Lily Tang Williams, she ran last time. She's already running. She's got a number of people who have already endorsed her, a number of House members, and I suspect there'll be other candidates who get in the Republican primary here, but that's certainly the desire of people who are supporting Dr. Vic. I mean, keep in mind, right, he's not a Trump guy. He supported Nikki Haley in the presidential race, so he's also got to look over his shoulder. You know, is there going to be a strong Trump Republican get into this primary, you know? And if there is, then you got a serious race on your hands, right? Just ask George Hansel, right, in 2022, who had Chris Sununu, and he's the mayor of Keene, and Bob Burns takes him out in that primary because Bob Burns was a big Trump guy. And so that's that's something to watch real closely. And as you know, in elections, I mean, that's what's great about New Hampshire and politics. You can't orchestrate
right.
it here.
Yeah,
like you can in most states, you know,
right,
in most states,
right.
you know,
well,
you know, the party bosses meet in a room and they come out and they say,
right.
so-and-so is going to
be the
choice.
Kind of like the DNC nationally. But But it looks like they tried to do that here in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
When Ann Custer announced she was retiring, not running again. And
yeah.
all immediately my messages of Democrat strategists and folks that are part of my show and on, like Lucas Meyer and others, were wondering if Colin Van Ostern was going to jump right in and get the nod from Ann Custer. And that's precisely what happened. But what they didn't count on was like a Senator Whitley jumping into the race and maybe others. So it's interesting
yeah.
they are going to have a race here. But I asked Lucas Meyer yesterday, Democrat strategist
yep.
and analyst, part of the
Very
show,
good.
And
yep.
he's great. Lucas, can a Republican win that district regardless of who the nominee is? And he said, yes, he thinks they can. Do you?
Yes, definitely, I do. I mean, everything's got to sort of line up, right? And you've got to, you know, you've got to find the right candidate with the right message. And I think if you're the Republican, you sort of got to get helped by what could happen in this Democratic primary, meaning you really need a not bitter but very competitive primary on the other side where there are hurt feelings and you got to patch things out over after it's done. And that's important for a Republican, too, in a district that leans left. But there's no doubt. A Republican can win that race. I mean, I have this argument with people in my business all the time that it's a Democratic district, but it's a winnable district. Just they both are. I mean, it's a just like the first district. You know, it's a Republican-leaning district, but Chris Pappas has won it 3 times. So, you know.
Yeah, it's ironic. I actually think Pappas is going to be tough to beat. The other thing I talked to mm-hmm. Lucas about yesterday is, remember the Jeb Bradley time mm-hmm. in Congress, popular mm-hmm. and all that, but he'd be the first to tell you he'll be on the show later today as Senate President.
Yep.
He was taken out in a wave. Is there
right.
a wave coming this fall in November that we can't see
know.
Yet? Is there a high tide in a wave, especially among independents, one way or the other? Because that could determine everything from the governor's race to these congressional races to the presidential race here.
Yeah, it could. I don't see it right now. I mean, I just think these two candidates at the top have such high negative, you know, of that I find it hard to fathom that there could be a big wave one way or the other. One caveat I do have is this race for governor, because we've seen this in the past, which is that the presidential race absolutely has a tremendous impact on what happens down ballot. But there have been many elections where this race for governor has done the same thing and done it in a different way, if you know what I mean. And I don't know whether this race for governor is going to turn into that, but it could, which is to say if it becomes lopsided in the fall, if Kelly Ayotte's a Republican nominee and Joyce Craig is a Democratic nominee and it's looking like Ayotte is going to win and it's looking like it's not going to be all that close, you know, if that were to happen, then you could have, we've seen it before, the potential of the wave. We saw it with, you know, with John Lynch, when he got 70% in his second term. I mean, and it was, you know, in a presidential year. And he was so much, you know, in a year, you know, that
right.
wasn't a super Democratic year, but it was a good year, but it wasn't. And they took the Senate. And the Democrats took the Senate and held it for a couple of terms and
yeah.
And took the House and had a working majority in the House because of John Lynch, not because of Barack
yeah.
Obama
but,
or
know,
because of John Kerry or
but
whatever.
You know, But Kevin, you know, this is not going to be unique to New Hampshire, uniquely local. All elections are local, but I don't think this November is going to be, and I'll make this case. We have a few more minutes. I'll give you the final word. And here's my hypothesis. I'm seeing national issues come into the state house, like sanctuary cities, gender issues, abortion rights. I'm seeing a lot of national stuff mimic the local or vice versa. We don't have like a big U.S. Senate race this fall. Right. It's a presidential race, governor, congressional. And it's, you know, I think Trump and Biden are going to play here, meaning how that's coming across. And I'm looking at the abortion rights are clearly going to be an issue that mainly the Democrats are going to trump, if you will, no pun intended, and say every Republican wants to ban abortion. You're going to hear that over and over again. But the border, the immigration crisis, southern border, people leaving blue cities by the droves, crime, inflation, pocketbook issues, and two wars in the world, which could be worse by November, by the way, not better. And I'm thinking a lot of independent voters, there could be more of a 5-8 or 9-10 point wave than people think. Because I don't think a lot of the independent voters like Joe Biden or like Donald Trump. But when your back's against the wall, it's not so much about who you like. You vote on what's best for you. And I actually think there could be a little bit more of a wave. And I never thought there would be, but I actually think Trump's sitting in a better position going into November right now than Biden, and that can change.
Yeah, it sure can. Yeah, and you're right about the national issues. And on Monday, we'll see it back here again. We had a hearing this week on the Sanctuary City ban bill, and next week, a second hearing, because the chairman, Terry Roy, Republican from Deerfield, wants to tack on to this bill this whole issue of squatting, which, you, as you know, in a lot of states
Become a real problem. I've been talking a lot about it on the, on the show.
You know, right, and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is kind of championing this down there. Well, Terry Roy wants to amend that bill and add to it a stiffening of the criminal penalty for people who just take somebody's house while they're gone and won't leave when
they come back. Isn't it amazing? We have to get to this point. If someone should have no rights, we have to come up with a law to kick them out of your house that you own.
Right.
All right, Kevin, make it a good weekend. Enjoy. Thank you, Kevin Landrigan, senior reporter, New Hampshire Union Leader. Aaron Rial, NBC News Radio national correspondent. Moving to New Hampshire, going to leave Connecticut because of the taxes. No, I'm kidding. But let's talk about record home prices. I'm seeing it here, and I don't know when it's going to change or maybe start to come down. I'm not sure whatever is in our lifetime.
Honestly, not anytime soon. Just don't expect it in the sense that interest rate cycles are long. And we are in a dark one at the moment. But what we know is that home prices, the median price of an existing home was $393,000 last month. It's a 5% increase from a year earlier. And it is the highest March price ever recorded, ever. This is existing home sales, Jack. They make up the majority of the housing market. They fell 4.3%. All of this, you know, you see home sales, they're up from decades lows that we saw last fall, but they had a pretty strong start to the year. They've stalled. You have interest rates hovering between 7% and 8%, and you have home prices at record numbers. It's a tough housing market going into what would have otherwise been the busy season.
You know, I want to if you have one moment, I shared on the show the other day, Aaron, I don't think you were on, but we're talking because you were talking about real estate, one of your segments. A couple of developers I know in the Seacoast went to a zoning board meeting in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, I think Tuesday night. I don't know if you've been to Portsmouth. It is a hot, growing city, meaning a popular place for people to live. It's got all kinds of all walks of life. It's on the ocean, but it's kind of the Piscataqua River. But parts of it, you know, you get out under the open Atlantic. It's got the working class, the tugboats, the restaurants, the coffee shops, the restaurant, the bars, the downtown. You know, 25, 30,000 people. You know, you get it, right?
I not only do I know it, my aunt lives there. Yes,
okay.
I know Portsmouth. I love
okay.
it. Yeah,
okay.
Love it,
well,
love it.
So my two developer friends went to a meeting the other night on projects, and the zoning board somehow is doing some Q&A, and they said, what's kind of the new low median price to get in here, whether you buy a house and fix it up or build a new one? What's the new? And they said $1.3
million. Wow. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, listen, it's beautiful. And, I get it, but that's a lot of money.
Aaron, if you send me your cell, I'll text you. One home I just saw the other day went on the market. And it's a nice, small home. It's a white, what I call like an old New Englander on a small street in Portsmouth, just outside of downtown, half mile. And, you know, it's a nice, when I say it's a nice small home for a family, if you're older, a couple or young couple starting out, one hold, like, you know, it would be small if you had two or three kids. But just a nice, you know, probably 80, 90-year-old white little porch, probably 1,800 square feet, just a small home. And I think the garage is the old single garage style from the 1930s. It's on the market for just under $1.2 million. And the lot is probably less than, you know, it's not even a, you know, an eighth of an acre. Now, you would think that looking at that house, if you didn't know Portsmouth and you just put it in Ohio, it would not even be $200,000. It might be $210,000 if you follow me. That's what your normal mindset, $1.2
million. Yeah, listen, this is.
And you know what? They'll sell it. There will be a buyer because it's Portsmouth. Someone will come in, and I'm hearing the profile, and I know we're not supposed to. Are younger couples like your age from states like you're from in New York or New Jersey, and they're worth from whether it's high tech, inheritance, they're worth more than $10 or $20 million. They want a small, safe town to live in, like Port. So they come here and they're spending over $1 million. They're not local folks. They're from outside. They come in with cash and not borrowing money. And at what point does that pool run out?
At some point. Listen, it has to. And we've talked about this. We talked about lack of wage growth. We've talked about the idea that you're seeing so many people. You know, the average salary here in the U.S. is $63,000 a year, and the least expensive state to live in comfortably is West Virginia, and you need $78,000 to do it. This creates the idea, you know this. I've been talking about this for 15 years, the whittling down of the middle class. Yeah. We can stop saying that. It's whittled. It's gone. You're seeing the rich and the working poor, and there's no in-between.
Yep. All right, Erin, have a great weekend. So you say your aunt lives in Portsmouth?
Yes. Yeah.
What's your favorite restaurant? I'm going to put you on the spot.
Oh, I haven't been there in a while, unfortunately. She actually was just here in Connecticut last weekend visiting me, but we haven't been there in a while. And know what? We always barbecue at her place, so I'm not very good at the restaurants, but I do think it's a beautiful town. I absolutely love it.
You can go to Stadies downtown where the locals go and get the chowder. Thank you, Erin.
Done. Thank you.
Rory O'Neill, NBC News Radio, national correspondent. The strike overnight into a strategic strike, presumably at a military base in Iran, and some of the other news of the week has kind of taken away some of the big news out of Manhattan. Rory O'Neill with an update on the Trump jury hush money trial. Take it away, Rory.
Yeah, the jury selection has resumed. They were able to seat 12 jurors and one alternate by the end of the day yesterday. The goal today is to get five more alternates. So they want a total of 12 jurors plus six alternates. The judge has said we could see opening statements in that trial starting on Monday morning. It's all going to depend on how things go today in that Manhattan courtroom.
Rory, I appreciate it. Any estimation, a couple weeks, this trial won't last that long, will it?
They say 6 to 8 weeks. But then again, we thought jury selection would take at least 2 weeks, and here we are already wrapped up in one.
I guess it was a lot of air conditioning in the courtroom as well. Thank you, Rory.
That's what the former president says. Yeah, chilly in there.
Senate President Jeb Bradley, Republican. Senate President, good morning, Senator.
Hey, good morning, Jack. How are you? Of course you can delay me. You're more important.
No.
Advertisers and your listeners.
When you get a House Speaker. J-Dog, you're correct. He's a tough character to deal with. He gives me no leeway, no latitude. You know, he's tough. He's tough. You think it's easy? No one cares about me. What's cooking? What's going on?
You know what? We're working our way through a pile of Senate bills. House bills. But you know what? We're really primary focus, Jack, on immigration issues and public safety issues. I think Bill Gannon's sanctuary city bill had a hearing in the House this week. My bill that gives law enforcement more ability on the northern border to detain and arrest people for trespassing had a House hearing last week. So those are big issues for us. We will be considering the House proposals on bail just as they're considering our proposals on bail. I think we're at a really close point to being able to get fixes to our bail system done so that we're not, you know, releasing violent criminals without seeing a judge to make sure that they're not a risk to society. Because while we're not as bad and we don't have as much of a revolving door as other states, there have been a lot of examples in New Hampshire of people getting released on PR, personal recognizance,
right.
and then going right out and reoffending.
Yeah, and we've had Manchester Mayor Jay Rouet talking about the numbers where he's seen that. But can I ask you another question? Because when you're talking about the bail situation in New Hampshire, made me think of this. Because I don't know the answer. I'm going to ask you, Senate President, you would know the answer. If, hypothetically, an individual, let's just pick Merrimack, New Hampshire, I have no idea why, breaks into a home, police respond, they catch the intruder, intruder's arrested. Through the investigation, they find out, I'm being hypothetical, but it's not so crazy. We've had this happen, and obviously, look at Rye, New Hampshire, a few summers ago. They had a person working on a home who was wanted for 12 homicides in Brazil and was a undocumented alien working on a home as a serial killer. So it happens. Let's just say in Merrimack, someone, police arrest a person locally, and they find out in the process it's an undocumented migrant who broke into the home. What's the policy here? Does that person go through the process of either contacting ICE, find out if there's a hearing? Are they held? Are they let go if the person says, I'm here seeking asylum? What's the status in New Hampshire if someone's arrested committing a crime but they're here undocumented?
Well, it depends on the community. It depends on the town. I think most towns in New Hampshire would cooperate with Customs and Border Patrol and, you know, give them a heads up before releasing them, which is what's happening in other states where they're just saying, nope, you know, we don't care. We're releasing people. I mean, thankfully, that happened in the case in Rye where the Brazilian mass murderer was, you know, turned over to the feds. But this is why we can't have sanctuary policies in New Hampshire. It's why, you know, I hope the House will support that bill and send it to the governor. Because the minute you have sanctuary policies, you have an incentive to come here and take advantage of, you know, government benefits. And if nobody is doing anything to you, you know, it's an incentive to come here. And we do have several towns like Hanover and Lebanon that have welcoming ordinances. And so, you know, this is why it's very important that we pass the ban on any sanctuary policies. Look at what's happened just in Massachusetts. I mean, where, you know, they're spending nearly $1 billion on services. People are sleeping in Logan. They've requisitioned, you know, recreation centers and whatnot. And I think people in Massachusetts should be rightfully outraged, and we don't want to make sure that doesn't happen here.
Let me switch gears, if I may. When I was on with Kevin Landrigan, we're talking about, for example, this fall in New Hampshire, the presidential contest here between Biden and Trump, second congressional district, whoever the nominees are, governor's race, first district. You know this well as a former member of Congress, and you've talked about it. I can't remember all the details, but I know that you were quite popular as a member of Congress, first congressional district. And when you were not reelected, it was really a wave that, some people would say when there's a wave, it's overwhelming. It's like a wave. Do you see a possible wave one way or the other this fall in New Hampshire that we're not seeing among independent voters, or do you think that's unlikely?
I think it's possible. I mean, there are a lot of unknowns right now. The world geopolitical situation is obviously very tense right now, and yeah. I think President Biden and his response has been weak. And weakness has invited aggression, whether it's in Ukraine, whether it's Hezbollah and Hamas or Iran. Weakness produces conflict. And, you know, I think the Chinese are just watching. So what might happen in the next 6 months there? None of this happened under Trump's watch. That's number one. Number two, if there is global insecurity and the price of gas goes up again, and it gets over $4, and I saw that gas is approaching, you know, $3.60 in places in New Hampshire now, you know, that's just going to bring home in a very visceral way, just as shopping in the grocery store brings it home, Biden's inflation and the economy and people falling behind. So I think that those are issues that are going to play out in former President Trump's behalf. And then you've just got these ridiculous show trials. You know, we'll see what happens. You know, but I think that if Democrats thought that they were going to ding President Trump with, you know, some of these ridiculous trials, it hasn't happened yet. If anything, it's enhanced his popularity. So, and then the third thing, look at Biden on the campaign trail. I mean, you know, you compare former President Trump going to Chick-fil-A and President Biden going to a Wawa, and you see the reaction that, you know, the people are having positive for, you know, President Trump, and at best, ho-hum for President Biden, you know. So even though President Trump's on trial in New York, he's doing interesting things like going to the bodega.
Yeah.
And so it's just highlighting illegal immigration,
right.
Lawlessness.
But did you catch the video a week or so ago? Because you wouldn't see this on CBS or ABC or NBC or MSNBC. And it was rather innocent, but Trump, I don't know where he was, J-Dog may know, he went into a Chick-fil-A as a customer, but he's Donald Trump. So he had his, you know, a few of his entourage there. He just went in to order something, hit it off with everyone in the restaurant. It was Atlanta. J-Dog said it was Atlanta. Hit it off with the people in the restaurant, bought everyone lunch and a drink, a soda, and then he went behind the counter, and he was just natural, and they loved him. And they're taking pictures and selfies, and it was just very natural.
Oh, yeah.
Can you imagine Joe Biden going into that Chick-fil-A and trying to relate and be one of the folks there? Can you imagine that?
No, it's not happening. And so the premise of your question, is there a possibility of a wave? I don't see Joe Biden able to create any of the kind of enthusiasm given, you know, the foreign policy debacles that have plagued him because he's always wrong on foreign policy issues. The fact that the economy, that so many Americans are struggling right now with inflation, that's not going to change anytime soon. And then you just look at him, you know, on the campaign trail, he can't generate any enthusiasm. So I think that, you know, Joe Biden has a ceiling, and I don't see him going much above that ceiling, which is why in a swing state of Pennsylvania, he's been there 8 times in the last, you know, few months. It's
yeah.
just...
But you got to give him credit. He went to in Pennsylvania. He went to Pittsburgh to the steelworkers and trying to relate. Talked about his uncle, not his grandfather. His
he
uncle
talked about his uncle being
yeah.
eaten by cannibals.
Yeah, eaten by cannibals.
Eaten
by cannibals when the plane went down.
Honest to goodness, Jack.
Can I ask you a question?
When people see this stuff, they're going,
"Hold on."
You know
what would
they
happen?
May not like Donald Trump for some reason, but I think people understand. You got to have a leader.
Yeah.
As president,
can you imagine?
You may not like all of Trump's policies. You may not like how he talks about things, but he does get the job done. And
can you
and
imagine?
Joe Biden can't do that.
Can you imagine if Trump said that at a rally with union workers in Pennsylvania about, you know, my uncle was eaten by cannibals? What the media would be saying?
That
headline would be everywhere about Trump.
Yeah,
gets
everywhere.
Gets confused about a relative's World War II plane crash in the ocean, claims his uncle was eaten by cannibals. They'd say Trump favors cannibalism. Trump, you know, it would be everywhere.
I know.
All right.
I know.
Hey, real quick, I got to tell you, I can't remember. I think it was Glenn Knobloch from Wolfboro we had on. We're having more authors, and he's written a great book about preserving loons, and he's a historian, but he's an author. He lives in Wolfboro. I just want to mention we had him on the show. It was great.
Oh, cool.
All right. Well, you
are. But, you know, the loons are back. I've seen them on my pond. I've heard them at night.
I asked him if he's an historian, too, if he's found any of the coins that Governor Wentworth might have fled after leaving his summer house up there. And he thinks that he took them all with him. I go, no. I know these folks back then. When they were in a hurry, they didn't take all the, that stuff was heavy back then. There's buried treasure there, I'm sure.
Well,
all right.
Don't know. I've been through that historic site. Didn't see any, Jack.
No, you won't see it. It's buried. Thank you, Senator.
All right. Take care. Have a good weekend.
We have Tom Raffio, great Friday.
Adam Bo.
Okay. Great CEO and president of Northeast Delta Dental, the Delta Dental Radio Show and Weekend Stories from the starting line of Marathon Week with some good news before we get to Ozzy Osbourne's press agent. Take it away, Tom.
On the good news front, a lot of New Hampshire runners had a successful marathon on Monday, including my wife, who did a 420. So kudos to you, Ellen, and the two fastest New Hampshire runners, Sam and Emily. We, Delta Dental, give them a bonus check for doing that. So we'll be meeting up with them in May. So New Hampshire is always well represented at the marathon. And then tonight, right here at NHTI, a fundraising race for scholarships for NHTI. 6 o'clock starting time. People, from the sound of my voice, if you want to run it tonight and haven't registered, just come over at 5:15. There is same day registration. And then tomorrow there is a half marathon in the Derry and Wyndham Trail. And I think my wife, who's a little passionate about marathon running, maybe doing a double within 6 or 7 days. So we're pretty much outdoors this weekend. Of course, the Celtics start on Sunday. I'm looking forward to that. And for my veterans friends, and Jack, we're into a really good routine now. Veterans are leaving me their number. Dr. Mitch calls them up, and then we take care of them. So it's a very good routine. So veterans who aren't eligible for the VA or for Medicaid, just give me a call at 223-1300. You mentioned stories from the starting line. All those proceeds go to oral health so we can support this veterans program. So it's all good. And on the Medicaid front, we continued every weekend to have mobile dental clinics. So that's my good story. And this weekend we have Jay Lucas of the Sunshine Initiative. So given the sunshine we're having, it's appropriate that we have Jay and the Sunshine Initiative on the radio show. So that's my story, Jack, and I'm sticking with it.